Beate Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, the Catholic Church, or social justice. Today, my visitor is Richard Deckinger. Richard, a warm welcome and hi to our radio program.
Good morning, or good afternoon, or whatever it is.
It's the morning. It's Friday morning, the broadcast. Richard Deckinger is originally from the United States and has been living in New Zealand for more than 25 years.
That's right.
He has a Master of Science in Renewable Energy and has worked as Ministerial Advisor and Policy Analyst. Richard is currently the chairperson of Access Radio Planet FM and is also a producer. His program is called Keep Auckland Beautiful. And it's once a week, is that correct?
It's once a week on Monday mornings here on Planet FM.
And we talked a little bit about his program before this interview, and I told him that this year the programs at our Mercy Spirituality Center are connected to our overall theme of gratitude. Several of our presenters focus hereby on creation. On the 13th of August, for example, Sister Bridget Crisp will give an evening talk on the importance of actioning gratitude. Richard, what do you think when you hear the word gratitude?
Well, gratitude is one of those really special feelings. And for me, what gratitude is when you surrender to what is and get into the flow. So, you know, you're talking about creation. You're talking about grace here, right, in this context. And gratitude is when you basically surrender to both. And so it's both a relief and a welcoming. But it's also it's got this overtone of humility because you're actually acknowledging that it's not all about you, that you're actually part and parcel of something that's flowing, not everything that's flowing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've expressed that well, but basically, you're surrendering into something and being grateful for it, and it's just a fabulous feeling.
I think that with your with the title of your program and the organization, Keep Auckland Beautiful, it's to me like already thank you to being beautiful, for Auckland being beautiful.
Absolutely, and keeping it that way. So many of our actions are not in a spirit of gratitude, are not in a spirit of flow with the natural world. And then there's friction, and that friction always ends up becoming something like pollution or violence of all different kinds in the community, because we're actually going against the natural flow.
And we have to be grateful for the beauty of creation, and that's why we have to work for it and not taking it for granted, right?
Well, ironically, I don't think we have to be grateful. That's kind of one of the interesting things about the human condition is we don't have to be grateful. I can be selfish. I can be, I could put my head in the sand about 1,000 things. But for me, and that's why I was talking about that surrender and that humility, is when you let go into that gratitude, actually life gets a whole lot easier on so many levels.
But you might feel sorry afterwards if you are taking things for granted.
Yes, you might. But again, you won't get to gratitude without some level of even letting that sorrow go and that regret.
Yeah.
You know, if there's no, using Christian terminology, if there's no forgiveness, you won't actually feel that gratitude at any depth.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you very much, Richard. For those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or visit our website or Facebook page at Tengaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitor today is Richard Deckinger, and he is a producer of the radio program Keep Auckland Beautiful. And he's involved in the movement Be a Tidy Kiwi. That's all a lot of actioning in keeping Auckland beautiful. So can you tell us more about your actions?
Well, we got involved, and this is going back a few years now, basically, how do you get people reconnected to the environment and looking after it? Now, Be a Tidy Kiwi has always been about litter, basically doing the right thing with your rubbish. So this is trying to promote appropriate disposal behavior. I mean, it really is that basic. And in some regards, it's infantile. We don't even care if it goes in the right bin. The point is it doesn't belong on the ground. And it's kind of that first step on the path of kaitiakitanga, you know? The very first step on that path is, you know, don't throw your crap on the ground. You know, don't take it for granted, to go back to our initial discussion. Don't take it for granted. Actually do something appropriate. And actually, proper disposal behavior really can be an unconscious thing.
Yes.
Littering, ironically, is often very unconscious. People just respond to the environment as they find it. And if it's filthy and littered and graffitied, they will tend to, without thinking, litter, graffiti, and treat it with disrespect.
So that means that if you start being a tidy Kiwi, others will imitate you.
Absolutely. It's if we find a place clean, we'll respect it. It's the same logic of putting your good clothes on to go to church on Sunday. Why do you dress? Because you're actually not only acknowledging the tidiness of the ceremony, but you're also creating that tidiness just by turning up in your glad rags. You know what I mean? You're actually contributing to it as well as gaining from it. And you know that feeling when we walk into somebody's house, and if the place is a wreck, we immediately have less respect for it. I don't know how else to say it. Whereas if we go into somebody's home and it's pristine, we tend to treat it with much more deference. You know, we go into a museum, we go into a church, we treat them with far more deference than when we go into a playground.
So where do you start with training people, creating awareness of being the first or the second or good tidy Kiwi?
Well, fortunately for us, Tidy Kiwi is over 50 years old. Okay, late 60s. It was dreamed up because there was basically takeaways and disposable things were just becoming the norm then, and it was not unusual at all for people just to leave their rubbish behind. And historically, the rubbish was all paper. It was all stuff that would literally compost away into the ground. So people didn't think twice about leaving their rubbish behind.
In some countries, you're still using leaves instead of plates.
That's right.
And that's not a problem if the leaves are on the ground.
Right, but even paper. And, you know, even going back a couple hundred years, if you went on a picnic, you would take china with you. Well, you always took the china home, didn't you? And if you left a paper napkin on the ground, it didn't matter. It was gone. That all changed with the advent of Bakelite and plastic and, well, and all and styrofoam and all these takeaway materials that are currently, well, littering littering the land and littering the ocean.
What do you recommend to somebody to bring their own container to the supermarket, for example?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. These are all the small steps that you can take. Really, what we need to do ultimately is start at the top, and we like plastic packaging because it's convenient and it's sanitary. Let's also just look at the positive side of this. When we wrap we create foods in a hygienic environment, we wrap them in plastic, and now we can ship them all over the world, and they remain hygienic because they've been wrapped in plastic. So don't discount the benefits. That's why we all embrace it, and it's cheap. However, it's killing us, and it's killing our environment, ultimately.
But there are different types of plastic.
There are different types of plastic, but, you know, if you think about it, none of them appear in nature. Nature doesn't know what to do with plastic. And, yes, there are some microbes that are figuring out how to eat plastic. But that's nature evolving because we have a plastic problem. That's not because nature set out to that's not because evolution suddenly decided that we needed plastic in the universe, and so plastic was invented by nature. It just didn't happen that way.
What happens to the plastic in New Zealand, for example? once it's used and it's in the in the rubbish bin. So let's not talk about on the ground, because let's assume that we are all tidy kiwis and we put the plastic
in
the rubbish bin. So what happens then?
Depends upon what local authority you're in, which is a big issue in and of itself, because it depends upon where your listeners are in the country. Let's take Auckland, just because it's the third of the country. It's going to go to Visy in South Auckland, and it's going to be separated out as best they can, to be fair, in these huge drums, these huge cylindrical drums that separate the metals and the plastics. And the separated items get baled up, and historically they've been sent to China or Vietnam or Indonesia to be processed, sometimes to be turned into plastic again, sometimes to be just used as fuel. Because remember, plastic is oil.
Yeah.
And actually it's fine to use plastic as fuel if you burn it at the right temperature and it doesn't create all these nasty dioxins and poisons in the air. When you do it poorly, say in a back lot, I'm picking on the Indonesians, no disrespect, but that's where the issues are literally in the news as we speak. They're using it as a power source for light industry in the back blocks of an industrial estate. They're not burning it at the right temperatures. They're just using it as a cheap fuel. Mm. And they're exposing their workers and the entire environment to dioxins and other nasty chemicals that come out from burning oil incompletely. You know how when your diesel vehicles spew out all that smoke because they're not burning the diesel properly? That's what's happening with the plastic.
So it's not really responsible to send it to a country where you don't know that they have the right measures.
Correct. And Indonesia is rightfully sending it all back to Australia and New Zealand right now. That's why it's in the news currently, is Indonesia saying, net. You said you were sending us recycled paper, but when we opened up all the containers, it was full of plastic. Yeah, exactly. And the plastic was then going to be used as fuel in inefficient industrial processes.
So what's going to happen with the plastic in the future in Auckland, for example?
It's starting to pile up all over the world. And all I can say is thank God for the Chinese to have the guts as well as the wherewithal to say no more. You know, the whole China sword thing. They just said, that's it, no more.
So would it be better, for example, if we had the bottles, glass bottles again, and recycle them, the glass?
Glass can be recycled infinitely. It doesn't degrade over time. A lot of plastics can only be used like twice. Some plastics, like PET, can be used many, many times, like your typical soda bottle. Mm-hmm. But glass can be used infinitely. Aluminium can be used infinitely. Tin, steel, like your tin cans, that can be used so many times you could consider it infinite. It's not quite true, but yeah, it's not perfect, but still.
So these are easy to recycle?
Yes, they are. They also tend to be heavy. Well, not aluminium, but glass. But the other thing is if humanity disappeared tomorrow and all we left behind was glass, Mother Nature knows exactly what to do with it. It's just sand in a solid form. Yeah, it's just sand in a solid form. Nature knows exactly what to do with that.
Yeah.
And when a broken bottle ends up at the bottom of the ocean, nature knows what to do with it.
So we'll have to go back to the glass bottles.
Well, I don't know. There might be something else out there. I think what we need to do right now is just limit the number of plastics that we're using, because part of the problem is there's so many numbers and so many different kinds of plastic that there's no clean recycling stream. If we limited ourselves to PET plastic and maybe one or two others, then all the plastic recycling would be of three kinds.
And then you can buy machinery that
correct.
Can
correct. Suddenly you have economies of scale.
Yeah.
Now, of course, marketers don't want that to happen, because I want my package to be different and I want my package to be special so that I can sell stuff.
You can color it. You can put the paper wrap around.
Yep, but we need less packaging and fewer types of plastic in the marketplace is the first step on that path.
Is that also one of your campaigns to eliminate or to reduce plastic?
No.
Not yet.
No. Well, no, it's just not Tidy Kiwi's kaupapa. Tidy Kiwi's kaupapa is literally to keep it off the ground. Okay, it can't be recycled if it's on the ground or at the bottom of the ocean, right? It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. We would prefer if it ends up in the ground, it ends up in landfill. where at least it's being processed in a modern landfill is going to be protected against leachate and all those other things. Point is our job is to stop littering. There are a whole bunch of other campaigns out there dealing with these issues. And as I say, we're kind of like the infantile, the first level of behavior is disposed properly, and that's our job.
Yeah.
And yes, there's a million other things we could be doing.
That includes everything, even cigarette butts, something small even.
A cigarette butt is, in my opinion, and actually my litter count statistics support this, the number one single-use plastic that is littered. People don't think that cigarette butts are plastic, but they are. And they don't break down unless they have UV light.
So it's only the tobacco that would be easy to recycle, but not the butt.
The rice paper and the tobacco don't get well, nature recycles them, yes. Yep, gone. But not the plasticized filter.
So what do people do when... I'm not a smoker, so I never had the problem. But if you finish your cigarette, where do you throw it? If there's maybe a little gloom, you wouldn't put in the rubbish bin because it might start to burn.
True.
What do they do?
Now, I'm an ex-smoker, but I'm also a guy who literally counts rubbish for a living. And I spend a lot of time observing behavior. I actually spy on people and observe littering behavior.
Yeah.
And count it. I keep statistics on this. And most smokers that I observe want to do the right thing. A lot of them will go over to a bin, and if there's no ashtray on the bin, they'll consider putting it out on the top or on the side. A lot of them will end up dropping it next to the bin and stepping on it if there's no ashtray because they just can't quite put it in the bin. But the point is the impulse to do the right thing was there. Now, the flip side of that is we like to think that, oh, it's the kids who litter, or, oh, it's the people who drink in the park that litter. Actually, the social science is pretty clear that the only group who litters more than others are smokers.
Really?
Yep.
That's because you said that they don't know what to do with it, and some don't realize that it's plastic.
They don't think it's plastic, but B, you don't want a stinky butt in your car, so you flick it out the window, and you create a habit of disposing things improperly. I mean, the whole point is it actually just, it encourages a habit of poor disposal, that's all. And yes, there are times when teens misbehave. Yes, there are times when drinkers misbehave. From my research in Auckland, the people who drink excessively in parks, and there's a lot of it because I measure it, are actually really good about stacking up all their bottles and stacking them next to the bins so that they get picked up. I know. Who knew, right?
Yeah.
The drinkers are pretty tidy. They don't want the bottles in their car because it's illegal. Right? And it's evidence that they're drink driving.
Yeah.
But so they fill up the trays and the boxes and they stack them right next to the bins in the parks.
Oh.
Because they don't fit in the top.
Yeah. So when you see somebody littering, do you approach a person?
Me personally? No, because usually I'm doing it as a professional and I'm actually spying on them and I'm just noting positive disposal behavior, negative disposal. And keeping statistics on it, so I don't approach them.
Yeah.
And, of course, what we want you to do as the public, and this is part of our campaign is let's put litter in its place, but the tagline is it's just how we do things around here. So how do you tell somebody off for littering? We want to empower people to tell someone off, but in a positive, pro-social, and inclusive way. Now, if your mom and dad tell you off for something, what do you feel? Guilty, shame, right? When your auntie tells you off, what do you feel?
I think it's worse.
Do you?
Yeah.
No, for most people, it's like, oh, all right, auntie. You don't feel the same level of shame. You know the behavior's bad. When your aunties whip you into shape, it's completely different from when your parents whip you into shape.
Well, I must have had different aunties.
Quite possibly. But we literally call it fire power.
Okay.
Fire meaning auntie in Māori.
Okay.
And we literally call it fire power. And you just say, hey, don't do that. Put your litter in the bin. It's just how we do things around here. Now, when I say that to you, I'm being very direct and forceful, but I'm not being shaming. I'm not trying to evoke any guilt in you. I'm just saying that that's the wrong behavior.
And so would they not say, oh, well, you are an American?
Again, I don't do it because I'm sitting there secretly observing.
That's right.
So I don't interfere in the process. I'm trying to be a scientist.
Do you think that people are afraid of telling people off,
yes,
even if it's a friendly way, because they might think, oh, well, what if that person gets aggressive against me?
I think people should do whatever they need to do to feel safe. And so in most cases, a lot of people won't say anything, and that's just fine. But if you feel the need to say something, keep it positive and inclusive. Don't shame them, because what you're doing then is getting their backs up, and then they'll do it as an act of rebellion.
Yes.
just to say, bugger you, and right? Whereas if you say, hey, don't do that, put it in the bin. It's just how we do things around here. They'll go, all right. You know, it's a different feeling, but you want to keep it inclusive and pro-social.
And that's your current campaign?
Excuse me. Yes, that's our current big campaign going, the national campaign. You may have seen the ads on television with, you know, the Prime Minister and various politicians pledging to be tidy Kiwis, because it's just how we do things around here. It's just normalizing the behavior. It should be so automatic that we don't have to think about it.
So afterwards, after the campaign, you will go around and observe again?
Oh, we never stop doing it. It's a constant thing. I've been doing it for 4 years now, nonstop.
How often?
I've got 86 sites in Auckland alone that I visit at least once a year. I've got another about 38 sites around the country that I visit regularly. And Auckland's a nice petri dish because it has rural, peri-rural, urban, suburban. It's got
multicultural and
multicultural. It's got it all. Basically, it is a nice subset of New Zealand.
And do you publish your results?
Yes. In fact, we published literally this time last year after the first 3 years of study.
So,
because that makes a time series.
How can you access the results?
You can go to beatidykiwi.nz and you'll see a report there. And while that focuses on Auckland, I can tell you, because I've done the work, that Auckland is a good proxy for the rest of the country. What I see in Gisborne and Wellington and Dunedin and Christchurch and Queenstown and Arrowtown and Rotorua and Tauranga and all the other places that I visit, the results are pretty much the same. They confirm, you know, the same kinds of places draw the same kind of litter and in the same amounts. So, yeah, Aucklanders are a fairly good example of the Kiwi behavior.
And coming back to the smokers, I was just thinking that because there are lots of campaigns against smoking, maybe there can be an awareness of smokers not just trying to stop smoking because it costs money, but also it saves environment.
Yes, although personally, as an ex-smoker, I think the health argument is a better one in terms of getting people to stop smoking. And their littering will stop as soon as they stop smoking, right? So my point is I would argue that if you're trying to convince somebody to stop smoking, environmental issues are at the bottom of the list. Save your health. And you'll feel so much better.
And that will be all part of it's an importance of actioning. So you have to be active. So in case of the smoker, okay, if you say they are more likely to stop smoking for health reasons, but then again, if people say, well, don't put the butt here, and then they think, oh, where can I put, you know? And but at the same time, you don't want to encourage smoking by putting trays on the rubbish bins.
Oh, no, you absolutely want to put trays on the rubbish bins because you're giving the people who do smoke the tools they need not to litter. And since we have as many tourists in New Zealand every year as we have New Zealanders, we double our population every year with visitors, many of whom smoke, they need these resources. Even if all New Zealanders quit smoking tomorrow, I would still actively pursue butt bins on rubbish bins because that's what encourages the appropriate behavior. People who don't smoke don't see ashtrays on bins. They're invisible. You really only see ashtrays when they're filthy and overflowing or if you're a smoker and you're looking for one.
Yes, I remember them filthy and overflowing in Europe.
Yeah.
So that's another campaign to get ashtrays on rubbish bins, right?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a campaign, but it's I talk to councils all the time about this because they're always asking questions. I mean, we're doing a huge pilot on binfrastructure.
Yeah.
How do you build bins in a way that gets people to do the right thing? And that includes smokers, but it also includes recycling. So we partnered with the Packaging Forum, and their thing is recycling. They don't worry about getting you to the bin, but they want you, when you get to the bin, to use the right one, if there's more than one. So it's a different behavior campaign, but it's related. My job is to get them to the bin. Their job is to get them to use the right bin. So we've partnered with them, and we're trialing bins all over the country. And we've worked out a bin design that actually dramatically reduces the amount of contamination of the recycling, which is important. Because if the recycling is clean, it'll get used and recycled. If it's filthy, it will go to landfill.
Mm. Thank you very much, Richard. That is very helpful. So I think that every listener will now watch out for bins with ashtrays.
Or, that's right.
And if there are none of them, they might write a letter to the Auckland Council and ask, can you please put these bins out so that we don't have the cigarette butts on the floor, on the ground?
Yes. Cigarette butts are 27% of everything I count.
Oh, my God.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Richard, and thank you for your work to keep Auckland beautiful. We are grateful for this because we would like Auckland to stay beautiful and, in fact, the whole of New Zealand.
Indeed. Well, Be a Tidy Kiwi is a national campaign. It's
a national
not just
campaign.
Auckland.
Exactly. Yeah. But we are here in Auckland, and that's you right. Brought the examples from Auckland, but Be a Tidy Kiwi for the whole of New Zealand. And I think that it's something that we should think globally. So it should be a tidy Kiwi wherever we are.
That's right.
Thank you very much. And so what is coming up in our Mercy Spirituality Center? We have on Friday the 26th of July and Saturday the 27th of July, Margaret Bowater, who is going to give an introduction to dream work. If you've never worked with your dreams and are looking forward to a chance to get to know more, please register with us. It will be a practical seminar that explains how, when, and why we dream. Also on the 27th of July from 10 to 1 o'clock, we have our annual ecumenical event. We are picking up on the theme of gratitude, which is our overall theme of the year, as you've heard today. Please note that this event will take place in St. Columba Center, Vermont Street in Ponsonby. On Monday, the 8th of August, we will have a muffin meeting with Mary Barker. Her talk is about touching the holy pilgrimage. Mary will use some pictures of art that will describe the journey of a pilgrim through the ages. That's Monday, the 8th of August from 10:30 to 12:30. And on Tuesday, the 13th of August, Sister Bridget Crisp, who we mentioned before, she will come to our center and give a presentation on the importance of actioning gratitude. This session will explore the grace and gratitude given to us by the planet and our common response given in return. Tuesday, 13th of August, 7 to 9 p.m. And for all events at our center, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09-638-6238 or through our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. And I thank Richard very much for coming here, for helping us to be tidy Kiwis so that we know what we are looking out for and to change behaviors if they are not appropriate.
Let's put litter in its place.
Yeah, and to be very gracious and polite to people who litter, because then it's more likely that they will stop.
Indeed, we're all litter bugs at one point in our life.
Okay, have a blessed Friday and a good week ahead. Thank you.
Kia ora.